We are moving and grooving. Hello.
Hello. Hello. And welcome to an episode of Too Scared to Sleep.
Bum, 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 bum.
Dun, dun, dun. In a world.
In a world.
Where Dylan and Jake both have one tooth extracted from their face. I have that exact same tooth gone.
Holy shit, do you really?
It's really weird.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
It is.
Badass. Well, yes, we are finally back. Last week was, I'll say it, entirely my fault.
But you were sick, so I wouldn't even give you shit about that. Because you felt really bad.
I did.
I felt bad.
Yeah.
At how bad you felt.
Yes, so I had some tooth that was giving me some sort of issue, and it was just shooting pain straight up into the nerve in my temple and into my brain. So there was a full, 8 days where I had a full-blown migraine the entire day. It was, as the kids say, the fucking worst.
It sounds that way.
Yeah, it was absolutely atrocious. I was incapacitated for an entire week.
Ugh, barf.
But finally got that pulled out. I did it 2 days ago, so it's still kind of in the healing process. So my meals have been soft foods, and I can't have straws.
Soft foods.
I ate some soft French fries in my truck while I was waiting for Jake to respond to me.
You haven't had anything hard in your mouth?
This is entrapment.
That's right.
I'm not going to answer.
There's no correct answer for that. Only wrong answers. In that.
Anyway,
so,
missed
about
this,
that.
Definitely.
I know, of all the things you missed. I wish I had more drama to talk about, but I don't. Let me tell you about the first time I almost got catfished.
Oh.
Off of the dating website.
Is it who I think it is?
No.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, so... this was back, let's say last February, just for shits and giggles, we'll make it February. I was on a dating website and I linked up to this woman. Let's say her name was Lydia. It doesn't really matter what the names are, but it plays into the end of the story. So Lydia said that she's 35 years old and she lives in Austin. And then she's got a couple of photos, one of which she was in Machu Picchu.
Of course, they're always in Machu Picchu.
Common denominator. I sent you another photo of another one that had...
You did.
Machu Picchu.
You've sent me three different photos of people and they're all in the exact same spot.
Yes.
With Machu Picchu in the background. It literally looks like you just removed the girl and replaced it. It's almost the exact same background in most of these.
Maybe when you get to Machu Picchu, there's an X on the ground and they're stand here, we'll take your photo. Because it's literally in the same spot.
They always are. Oh my God.
But anyway... This woman, Lydia, had a couple of photos on her dating profile, and the first thing that you notice from that is that the quality of the photo is lower than the current technology within phones.
Yeah, that's always a red flag.
That's number one red flag when it comes to online dating is how old are the photos that you're giving? Because sometimes you can show up at these first dates, and the woman that you've been talking to was 5 years younger and 50 pounds lighter than the woman who shows up at the restaurant. And I know that that sounds horrible, but
you need
to represent yourself as close to the same person that you are when you walk in the door. Otherwise, you're just inviting disaster.
Yeah,
because
there's
a lesser
wrong
guy
with,
is going to excuse himself to go to the bathroom and walk out on you.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with being, the age that you are, the weight that you are. It doesn't matter. But if you are actively lying about it, and you don't just say something at least, hey, the pictures that I have, they're from a couple years ago. I look a little bit different now. That's all you got to say. At least prepare you.
That's all you've got to say. Just let them know. Listen, I put that photo up there because I went to Machu Picchu back in 2014 and it was one of the most exciting experiences of my life. So I have that photo. I obviously look a little bit different, and there's ways that you can get that. You can send a person a current selfie and say, oh, send me one back. And they might send you one back. Or, oh, do you have an Instagram? And then you can start talking through Instagram and get an idea of what's going on. But sometimes they try to elude that and they won't let you know.
Yeah. See, with my Tinder profile, I have a couple pictures of me that there's not very many pictures that I actually like of myself, but I have a couple of them. The problem is half of the ones that I have that I actually like are from when you and I still worked at Harbor Freight.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still in high school. I still had blue in my hair and I didn't have a beard. I just had mustache goatee.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, I liked those pictures, but I was a lot skinnier and had, you know, I just looked different. It was a different vibe. And as much as it pains me to do it, I had to get rid of those because that's just not me anymore.
That's right.
And, you know, I'm trying to be as real as I can be, and that's right. Not worked. But whatever. I digress.
So Lydia did not do this. All of her photos were from older generations of phones. You could tell because of the number of pixels in the photo, the quality of the photo, and the way that they were cropped.
Mm.
So I start talking to her, and it seems to be going okay. And then after a couple of hours of talking to her, she says, "Oh, actually, Lydia's not my first name. That's my middle name."
Okay, which I can totally understand.
There's lots of ways. Back 2-3 years ago, because of work, I was using my middle name, which made perfect sense to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a whole story behind it. There were two other guys named Jacob at work, and it was just going to be too confusing. So I used my middle name. I totally get that. Some women will use a middle name when they're on online dating because they don't want to be found, which is totally understandable. There's a lot of creeps out there.
There's a lot of creepy dudes. So I said, okay,
that's fine. That's not your middle name. That's fine. And then she says, well, I'm not 35. I'm actually 43. Okay, that's a big one.
That's a little bit of an age difference. That's more than just a couple years. That's 8 years. That's almost a decade.
How do you mess that one up? It's like, okay, all right. And at this point, remember, I told you, online dating is more of a spectator sport at this point. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
When you've got one of these like this, you're in it not because you expect to ever meet this person or you expect to ever have a relationship. You want to see how far it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how crazy can this get? Because it's already a little crazy. Different name, old photos. Now we're talking about a different age, a completely different age. It's a little different if you're like, oh, well, actually, I'm 32, and I just put 35 because I wanted to, you know, to reach a higher group. Or, you know, I'm actually 42, but I put 40 because I didn't want to have that stigma. 8 years is a big thing.
8 years is a bit of a red flag.
So then strike three comes up, and she says, actually, I'm not living in Houston right now. I moved back to Arizona. Okay. All right. And again,
this is just...
And again, it's like, if it was for anything other than entertainment, we would have just pulled the plug and stopped talking to this person.
Yeah, because this is just hitter after hitter.
Oh, yeah, hitter after hitter. But this point, it's like, okay, nothing else is going on. There's no football game on right now. We might as well see how far down the rabbit hole we can go with this thing. So I said, okay, so why are you in Arizona right now? Oh, I'm taking care of my family, blah, 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 COVID. Okay, maybe it's true. When are you coming back to Austin? Oh, I'm coming back in October, right? And so then the funniest part is stage two. Stage two happens. And she starts using all sorts of terms of endearment. Hey, honey. Hey, sweetie. I'm all yours. Stuff like that. It's like, listen, it's obvious you want. Are you going to ask me for money at some point? Is that where this is headed? Because we haven't even met. We haven't even FaceTimed. I don't even know what you really look like at this point. And you're throwing out words like we've known each other for 6 months and we've been dating.
Yeah.
Like exclusively. Seeing each other 4 or 5 times a week dating. Don't be calling me honey, sweetheart, lover, stuff like that, right? So, back and forth trying to get her to video chat, trying to get her to send a new photo. She never sends new photos. It's always strangely cropped, bad quality. Not bad quality, but not current phone quality. Not current Samsung Galaxy quality. Not current Xbox, iPhone quality.
Yeah.
Something older. So this goes on for another 2 days. So on day three, I was like, let's FaceTime. She's sending me text through a blue text. It's obvious she has an iPhone. She can FaceTime, and she won't do it. And I said, what's going on? She said, well, I just don't feel comfortable doing this. I said, okay, that's fine. So I just let it go, went to sleep that day, and then the next day she starts in early. She's like, I can't believe that you don't trust me, and I can't believe that. And I was like, okay, first of all,
Whoa. We
have not met. This is not about trust. I don't know who the hell you are.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Absolutely right. I don't trust you.
If every piece of information on your bio, you had to say, actually, that's not true. It's this. Of course there's no trust. You are a stranger.
You are a stranger, danger stranger. So... And then at some point I was like, look, yeah, I don't trust you because everything you're doing is suspicious. And she just left it at that for like a whole day. And then on Saturday of that same work week, bombarded me with all of these, please take me back. I miss you so much. And I'm like,
take me back.
Yes, take you back from where? You miss me so much because of what? Do you even hear yourself
what
right now?
What in tarnation?
What is wrong with you, lady?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, but it was crazy. It was like, and again... Again, I am not like a I was like, this is complete bullshit. Of course it is, but it was entertainment.
It's something, yeah.
It was entertainment.
I would be interested.
Yeah, taking just screenshots like of those ride. Texts and showing it to people, like, look at the crazy stuff she's saying now. Oh, it's a trip, man. It's that a trip. But that happened last year. Nothing that exciting has happened yet so far.
Fucking crazy, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was the first time someone tried to catfish me.
All righty. Well, at least you didn't lose a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, there's it was that. Poorly done. I mean, it wasn't like those 90 Day Fiancé guys who dropped like $10,000.
Oh, earlier today, I got a follow request on Instagram from an account that was just called Sugar Mama. And I was like, this is probably a scam, but we'll see. If there's a chance, I'll take it. And I accepted the request, and then I followed back, and they sent me a message. It was like this long, drawn-out message about, like, you know, not looking for anything, you know, other than just companionship. You know, if you're an interesting person, I just want to talk to you.
I'm an interesting person.
Right? She's like, I'll do a one-time, like, the first payment of $4,500, and then a weekly allowance of $500, and I messaged back, and I was like, I would absolutely be interested in this.
This was on your Instagram? Or the
Yes, on mine. Oh. It was on mine. It wasn't on the podcast one.
That's too bad.
No, it was on my personal one. And I was like, I'm, you know, I'm unique, to say the least. I feel like I'm pretty interesting. I definitely want this fucking money. And then she didn't respond to me, and then I looked back later, like a couple minutes later, and it just said Instagrammer, and the account got deleted.
But wait! Man.
Slipped through my fingers.
We were going to have true love. It's too bad.
I know. Again, especially if it got deleted, definitely a scam. And I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to give out my bank information or anything. But if somebody's like, hey, can I get your Cash App and I'll send you money? Absolutely, you can send me money through Cash App. Please send me money through Cash App. But yeah, that was almost something to be exciting. And then it wasn't. So that's where I'm at. I'm trying to think. I feel like there was something kind of exciting that I was going
to
talk about.
We had so much to talk about. Wait, let me back at. You know what was funny? What we forgot to talk about was when we were having the snowstorm. We were talking about what it would be like if you were a ghost, if you died and came back.
Oh yeah,
and you'd be the worst ghost ever, because you'd be so like it'd be like 3 o'clock in the morning and someone would like wake me up and be like, Jake, what's up? I heard some loud sighing from the kitchen. Like, oh, don't worry. That's just Dylan. He's my co-host, and he died last year during Snowmageddon, and he promised to haunt me, and he haunts my house.
And I just and float by like, your bed and go,
yeah. I'm like, what does he do? He doesn't do anything. He wakes up at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He watches Netflix. So like, you know, something's always on cue on Netflix. And then he wakes up like at 3 o'clock in the morning and makes like macaroni and cheese and sighs. And that's it. I mean, he might leave a bowl in the sink, but that's about as much haunting as he does. He like doesn't interact at all. He just sighs.
That's
the kind of ghost that you would be.
I would love to argue and say, no, I'd be a real scary ghost. I'd be super cool. I would throw things all around. But no, that's it. I would just like stick to my normal schedule. I would probably just kind of sigh a lot. I feel like I would play with Boomer a lot, because I feel like if I'm a ghost, I'm not allergic to cats anymore.
You probably do that already. You're probably the one who's playing the zoomies with him in the middle of the night. You just haven't, like, it hasn't cycled through yet. It hasn't cycled through yet. You from another multiverse.
Yeah, me in the future has come back to this point in time to play with Boomer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I believe it.
That's probably what it is. That's why he's, like, not freaked out by either you in the corporeal form or you in ghost form.
Yeah.
He goes along with both.
Exactly. Maybe the ghost me is here right now.
Probably so. I had a crazy lucid dream where my older brother brought me. Okay, first of all, it was just so strange. He took me to college with him, and I was going to like an advanced, like a theoretical physics class with him.
Okay.
I don't know, he's not into theoretical physics. But he's in this theoretical physics class, and he's like, just find a seat. And so obviously I go sit next to like the prettiest girl in theoretical physics class, which means that she was still a little nerdy, but perfect, like totally up my alley, of course.
We do love a good nerd girl.
Mm-hmm. And I was like talking to her and like talking to the kids around me, and we're talking about Star Trek and stuff like that. And my older brother was like, leave the nerds alone. And I'm like, I'm amongst my friends. And I was like, look, I'll do something. I'll show you that they're all nerds like me. I said, and I stood up in class, like after class was done, like everybody was still in there. I said, show of hands, how many of you took senior photos in a Starfleet uniform? And there were like 25, 30 people raised their hands in this room of 100 people that they had taken senior photos in Starfleet uniforms.
Oh my God. Did you do that?
No. Damn. God it. Damn, do I wish I'd had.
Oh man.
I wish I had those photos.
Oh, I wish you did too.
I mean, I know people who actually did that in like Next Generation jumpsuit.
That is delightful. That is so good. Mm-hmm. Man.
We should do that. All right. I'm sorry. I've gone down the rabbit hole. But I had to talk about you as a ghost. I thought it would be so funny.
Oh, yeah. I think it's hilarious.
All right, Dylan. What's your topic?
All right, my friend.
Let's do it.
Today, we are going to be talking about a horrifying little man who hails from just 15 miles east of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Long ago in the mysterious land of Toronto, Canada.
Exactly. Scott Pilgrim was totally dating a high school girl.
So, born in British Columbia, Canada in October of 1949, his parents ran a pig farm that was about 15 miles east of Vancouver. And while we know some of the basic information about his early life, there is not a lot in the way of details. We are talking about Robert Picton, known as the pig farmer.
Or oh,
the
God. Butcher. I know where this is headed.
Yeah,
I'm not okay
buddy.
With this. Let's do it, though.
Yeah, buddy.
Ugh, pigs are so gross for these reasons.
Hell yeah, they are. So, like I said, we don't have a lot of information in the way of details of his early life, but it didn't seem to be a particularly terrible childhood. I mean, it definitely wasn't like a typical family unit, and it was far from a perfect life. But there was no sort of incest or sexual assault or religious trauma, as we see far too often in the people we talk about. Mm-hmm. So Robert was one of three children. His sister Linda had been sent away to live with some family members, as their dad had decided that a pig farm was no place for a little girl to live.
No, I would think not.
Yeah, you would think.
Sounds gross.
But Robert and his younger brother David stayed at the farm, and basically they worked there their entire lives. Their dad didn't really do a whole lot other than farm, and their mother was a little bit overbearing. She was definitely kind of an unusual character, but, you know, they just kind of kept working hard. I didn't hear any sort of, reports about her or him physically abusing the kids. The mom had a tendency to, like, get angry, and she shouted. She apparently had this, like, high-pitched kind of screech voice. Mm-hmm. But it was just kind of like a weird life. It didn't seem too traumatic, though. But because of the filthy life of the pig farm, neither the children nor the parents cared much for cleanliness. They kind of just let the animals run through the house if they wanted to, and, like, didn't care so much about showering. So it was pretty gross. But consequently, Robert and David were both reported as being filthy and smelling like manure constantly, leading to them being heavily bullied at school. Robert was also placed into a special education program, as his school has labeled him slow, and he was constantly falling behind in his classwork.
That's not nice.
No, but, you know, he doesn't seem like a very intelligent individual in the classic sense. So it's not like they were just being assholes, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But also they just hated school, so they had no reason to try or care.
It's funny that this guy's a baby boomer because he was born in 1949, right? It's like most of those baby boomers, they have no reason that you would think of to become serial killers, but they all ended up becoming serial killers anyway.
Yeah, honestly.
Even though people talk about it being like the, you know, oh my God, the baby boomers, you know, man, these wonderful... these wonderful titans of industry and culture who brought us from, you know, World War II and brought us into the prosperity of the 60s, and then the flower children ruined it. Really? Do you know how many freaking serial killers we got out of the baby boomer generation?
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus fucking Christ,
which,
man.
Which generation was cutting off people's heads and then having sex with dead bodies? Was it y'all, or was it the hippies who just wanted to do acid and see God?
Yeah, which one was it? Yeah.
You want to remind me which one was there? Yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. What was it? How old was Jeffrey Dahmer, and how old was Ted Bundy, and how old was John Wayne Gacy? That's right. They were boomers.
Exactly.
Baby boomers.
Fucking boomers. Anyway, so yes. David and Robert both hated school for obvious reasons. They were known for skipping school. I heard in a documentary that I was listening to that they more than once returned home and then they went, like, snuck into their room. When they were supposed to be at school, they left school and they came home and they were hiding in their bed until school was over, and they waited till about the time they would normally arrive to get out of their bed and then go meet their parents outside so that nobody would know that they skipped school. Like, it's just this elaborate plan for not being in class.
Right.
Which I do respect. I get that. They ended up dedicating all of their time to farm work, as most boomers do.
That's all you gotta do.
I worked myself through everything.
That's right.
I gotta take care of the homestead.
Gotta take care of them cows.
That's pretty good. All right, so they dedicated pretty much all of their time to farm work, with Robert especially caring for the family's livestock. It was mostly pigs, but they had a couple other, like, chickens and whatnot. He loved working with the animals. That was his favorite thing. And when he was 11 years old, he'd actually saved up enough money where he was able to buy a calf at an auction, which became a close friend, as Robert really didn't have any friends outside of his brother. So he grew very close to this calf. He loved the calf, and he always made sure to take great care of it. He would rush home, and he would feed it and nurture it, until one day he returned home, and his calf was nowhere to be found. I'm sure you can see where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
So he found his mother and was talking to her about what happened to the calf, saying that he couldn't find it anywhere. And the mom basically just, like, no emotion, no hesitation, said, "Go down into the barn." And he went into the barn and he saw the calf was killed and slaughtered.
No.
And to make it worse.
Let's make it worse.
His trauma and grief was only accentuated as the calf was what was served for dinner a couple different nights.
Oh, no.
He had to see the body of his only friend.
This is why he became a murderer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this pretty much snapped any sense of, like, human connection or compassion that he had. Like, they just killed it. It's like John Wick's dog.
This is what started it.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, after this, obviously that did not sit super well with him. Definitely very upset, but he continued to work on the farm because what else could he do? Robert Picton had eventually dropped out of school at the age of 14 due to a persisting hatred of the school and lack of achievement. But after he dropped out, he actually found work as a butcher's apprentice. Where it was reported that he was actually a very good worker, and he had a knack for butchering the animals. He continued his apprenticeship along with his farm work for about 4 good years. And then we reach 1967.
Here it comes. This is when it all falls off the rails. I can feel it.
This is where something falls off the rails. I guarantee you this is not going to go where you think it's going to go.
I'm so excited. Let's do it.
So he learned of a horrifying accident, and he got to witness the ruthlessness of his mother in 1967. And let me tell you how that went down. So his brother David had just gotten his license and was driving the family truck, and he apparently hit and seriously injured a young boy on the road. He drove the truck home as quick as he could, and upon telling his parents, their mother knew exactly what to do. She told David to take the truck into the vehicle garage and fix the damage on the truck while she handled the boy.
God.
She went out into the road and found where the injured but still living boy was. He was just lying there, basically trying to get up, but he couldn't because he got hit with a big-ass truck.
Mm-hmm.
And she rolled his body into a waterlogged ditch where the boy had drowned.
What a monster. This lady's a monster.
Oh, yeah. Kills her son's cow and then eats it.
Makes him eat it.
Makes him eat it. And then finds this little boy that her son hit and kicks him into a puddle deep enough for him to drown. Yeah. However, upon investigation, the police decided that the death was accidental, and it was swept under the rug for the Picton family and never brought up again. But it served as an intense reminder of the family bond of the Pictons and how cruel his mother could be when her family was threatened.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that is a horrifying image. If my mom straight up murdered a child, like, in front of me, I would be pretty disconcerted.
Yeah, no kidding. What's to stop her from murdering you next?
Exactly. Exactly. So, after that, there's not really a whole lot of interesting information. Nothing really noteworthy happened.
Until.
Everybody just kind of continued working. Until Robert turned 21, and he abruptly ended his apprenticeship at the butcher shop and decided to work full-time at his family's farm. Robert focused mainly on the pigs on the farm and decided that he would use his full-time's earning to add a new task to his usual chores. He was known for going to farm auctions and buying pigs, only to bring them home to the farm for the sole purpose of slaughtering them.
Oh my god.
They've got pigs, he goes out and buys pigs, brings them home, and then fucking murders them. Robert took the remains of these pigs and whatever other meat they had lying around and brought barrels full of meat to the West Coast Reduction, which was an animal waste rendering plant. And after dealing with the plant, he was known for hanging out around an area called Low Track, an area most well known for its crime, prostitution, sleazy motels and bars, and drug dealers and addicts.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a real, real nice place. And he began becoming very well known amongst the prostitutes and drug dealers. He had found a group of people that actually looked up to him there. People he could help and do favors for, and people that respected him, and basically kind of fueled his need for power and acceptance. He's been bullied all throughout high school. He dropped out. All he's ever done is work. But eventually, his need for power grew more and more intense, until eventually he got more and more prostitutes who he eventually became violent with, doing what he knew best, killing, butchering, and disposing of meat.
Here it comes.
Bum, 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 bum.
It's getting dark. Love it.
Oh, it's getting dark. Yeah. My notes on this one are 7 pages. Awesome. So we're in for the ride. We got some information on this one. After some time of continuing his double life of the simple pig farmer and underworld hotshot murderer, things changed in 1978. After the steady decline of his parents' health, his father died in January of 78, and soon after, his mother got terminal cancer. Now, just adding a little bit more trauma onto everything he's already experienced, watching this once powerful woman who murdered a child shrivel up and suffer into a frail, weak husk of what she was incredibly traumatizing to Robert, as he was the one who was caring for her. Eventually, only 3 months after her husband died, she followed suit. And in her will, she left the farm to her 3 children, who split the inheritance evenly, but they left Robert the farm, as neither sibling wanted anything to do with the hard work involved, or, you know, any of that issue.
So they left it to him.
Yes. So the way the arrangement worked out was the sister went away and did her own thing, but David and Robert did stay together. David took over the main house, and Robert was happy to take over the farm work. It was what he knew best and what he felt most comfortable doing. It's speculated that he had kind of a fear of failing outside of the farm, like doing any other work, so he was happy to just be able to stay there. Robert had moved into a trailer that was on the property a little bit closer to where he was supposed to be working, and like I said, David took over the main house. And for the first time in his life, Robert actually had the freedom to do pretty much whatever he wanted with whoever he wanted. And he was well known for bringing a variety of sleazy characters to his farmhouse, hanging out with them. He let's see, he was known for paying them money or drugs to help on the farm or to clean his trailer or just kind of like hang out with him. But the one thing that he truly wanted from most of these people was the one thing they weren't giving him: sex.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. And I think we all know what happens when crazy, traumatized people want sex and don't get it.
Yeah, bad things happen.
Bad things, one might say. And in this case, that did happen.
They don't react appropriately.
No, they don't. And a good example of not reacting appropriately is exactly what happened one night in 1980. When Robert Picton picked up a 14-year-old girl that he had seen walking around the streets, and according to her reports to a journalist later, shortly after Robert had picked her up, he pulled out a knife and attacked her. He stabbed her and sexually assaulted her, and left her to die in an empty parking lot.
Good God.
Luckily, she had survived the encounter. But I do use the term luckily loosely, because even though she reported it, nothing came of this, and Picton got away with it.
You serious?
Yep. They never even questioned him about
it. Must be nice.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's see. Although this attack did actually satiate his desires for a little while, and he didn't end up striking again for over a decade that we know of. He just kind of returned to his normal routine of farm work and picking up prostitutes, doing the regular thing, apparently nothing too crazy. But in 1994, the brothers ended up selling the north end of their farm for about $2 million. They used this money to start what I had heard reported as a social events business in 1996.
Entertainment 720.
Entertainment 720. and they called this place
Xanadu.
No, they didn't.
They lost out.
They did, but also I'm going to say the name of this unit, okay? And I want you to just sit with it, let it marinate for a minute. I want you to let that get in your bones, all right?
Okay, I'm ready.
Piggy's Palace Good Time Society. Just let it sit with you. There's the face.
Did they not...
Piggy's Palace Good Time Society.
Did not clear it with anybody? I mean, off the top of my head, I could think of like 10 other names that would be better than this.
Of course you can.
Porky's. They missed out.
Shit.
They shot it. They were so close.
Shit. That's pretty good, actually. They missed
their shot.
That's much better than Piggy's Palace Good Time Society.
What? Just call it Freddy Fazbear's while you're at it. Oh, we watched that movie.
Oh, Willy's Wonderland. Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That movie fucking rocks, man.
Nicolas I would love Cage to get fucking in probably the role that he was born to play, and I'll tell you why. Cuz he doesn't dialogue. Say one single word throughout the entire movie.
Fuck yeah, man. That movie knew exactly what it was, and it just hit the nail on the head.
That was one of the dumbest movies you've ever made me watch.
Oh, it's so good. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it was so stupid.
Anyway, let's get back to Piggy's Palace Good Time Society.
This place sounds so stupid. I'm sorry. Keep going, though.
Oh, yeah. So, basically, they used their money to erect this building. That's the name they gave it for some fucking reason. And this served as their venue to throw wild parties, where the brothers would sometimes invite upwards of 1,000 people to hang out there. I think it was reported that at some points it got to about 1,700 people in this building at one time.
They could have named it so many different things, but whatever.
They could have named it so many different things. But this is also a person who kills and, you know, does horrible things to human beings. So I'm not going to... I don't think this is what we should be... Yeah, this isn't the focal point of the story.
Right.
But anyway... Are you putting on your riding gloves right now?
Maybe.
All right.
Look, we got things popping. I have a list of 7 goals for 2021, mm-hmm. and we're working them. What are we talking about? Rider safety course. I'm signed up. I haven't even talked about that, but I'm signed up for the rider safety course. And I'm putting my bike in the shop in a week.
I know, and I'm very excited for
it. I set an appointment for it. So, yeah, I mean, shit, bro. We're doing it. So yes, I am putting on my riding gloves right now. Piggy's Palace. Oh my God, what a stupid name.
Not just Piggy's Palace. Piggy's Palace Good Time Society. Anyway, while they had these crazy parties, Robert was well known for inviting the prostitutes that he frequented and afterwards having them join him in his trailer for sex, sometimes involving bondage, other kinks, and some of his more bizarre sexual fantasies, using his newfound wealth to exploit the workers of Lo-Trak even more than he already was.
It's a different world if you say, hey, do you want to come back to my trailer and have sex? And there's a woman on this planet who says yes to that.
Yeah.
To my trailer. Okay.
I mean, there are some nice trailers. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But also, this is a gross pig farmer man in his gross pig farmer man trailer.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
This part feels icky. But... like I said, he used this power, or he was using his money to exploit the workers of Lo-Trak even more than he already was. And with this power increasing, it also increased his violent tendencies. Oof. Because what happens when you give a crazy man a shitload of money? Again, nothing good. Spoiler alert.
Not good.
Not good at all. Now we're going to go ahead and jump forward to 1997. So now we see his rage progress yet again when a prostitute named Wendy went home with Robert, and when he tried to forcibly handcuff her during sex, she did not enjoy that, and she broke free. She ran out of his bed. She ran out of his bedroom, and of course Picton became enraged and took out a knife. Well, whoa. Yeah, but... Wendy over here is a bad bitch, and Wendy got a knife of her own.
Good girl.
And defended herself.
Good girl.
Basically the way I heard the story told, because I watched a documentary about him, and they talked to somebody else who knew this girl, Wendy, and she had massive scars all over her body.
Oof.
Picton wounded her heavily, but she got her fair share of cuts and stabs in, too. Apparently, it was like blow for blow. Every time he cut her, she turned around and stabbed the shit out of him.
Good
and, like,
for her.
Got a fucking slash.
Good for her.
Good for fucking her. Yeah. And right. Even though she's heavily wounded now, she was able to run out of the trailer and flee the farm, where she was picked up by an elderly couple who was driving by. And they took her to the hospital, and she was A-OK, except for, I mean, trauma and heavy scarring. But she didn't die. And upon her healing, the police charged Picton with assault, but unfortunately, Wendy was too terrified to show up in court and testify, and the case ended up being dropped.
Fuck, Wendy, come on, girl.
Yeah.
So close.
And only a few months later, Picton returned to Lo-Trak to strike again.
Of course he did.
This time he picked up Marnie Frey, a heroin addict and prostitute, and he promised her drugs in exchange for sex. So he took her back to his house, and after they had sex, Picton became incredibly violent, and Marnie was never seen again.
Whoa. You just dropped right off that cliff, didn't you?
Yeah. Just...
I wonder what happened to her. Oh, that's right. He lives on a pig farm. He fed her to the pigs.
Yeah, it is suspected that he killed and butchered her, scattering parts of her body in his pig farm and getting rid of the rest at the West Coast reduction plant that he frequented even before he started murdering people.
No es bueno.
And after this murder, it marked the turning of a violent new leaf.
Here it comes. It's about to go off the rails. I can feel it.
There soon began a sharp spike in missing persons cases when Picton started killing, and in 1998 there were 9 more reports of missing women. But can you guess what police did?
They ignored it.
They refused to investigate and brushed off the idea of foul play because it was prostitutes, mostly.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They kept telling concerned people, these people are prostitutes. They have a tendency to just get in a car with a John and, not come back for periods of, long periods of time. Or maybe they just got on a Greyhound bus and left or whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. Because they don't want to do any work. Yeah. So that's what police were doing while this man is killing people and feeding them to pigs. But The prostitutes knew that something was going on because, of course, they're being targeted.
Mm-hmm. They're being hunted, and so they care.
Exactly.
Even if nobody else does.
Exactly. But the thing is, nobody suspected Robert Picton because of how well-known and generally well-liked he was. Like I said, he's been building up his reputation in this area for a long, long time. You know, doing favors for people, being just kind of a generally nice dude. You know, even the prostitutes, like, except for the ones that he murders, he's apparently pretty cool with all of them so that he can keep coming back and can keep building up this relationship. And nobody suspected him at this point. Until late one night, Lynn Ellingson, a friend of Robert Picton's and a crack addict who was living on the farm with him, was awoken one night to some weird noises, and when she got up to investigate, she was greeted to the image of a dead woman hanging in the barn.
Whoa.
This woman was Georgina Pappin, and Lynn fled the farm fearing for her life. However, despite her being a witness to the murder, Ellingson didn't go to the police, and Picton actually never followed her. He knew that she saw what happened because he was in the room there. Mm-hmm. But it's suspected that maybe because of his actual friendship and connection with her, he didn't go after her. Don't really know why, but he was able to keep on butchering because she did not go to the police.
Good God.
Yeah. But that plays heavily in the end of the story.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, yeah.
We love when it does.
We love when it does. Now, the next year, by February of 1999, this is 2 months before I was born.
God, you're so young.
I'm a child. There were more than 30 women missing from the Vancouver area near him, and this number continued to rise while police still ignored it. And Picton was getting ready for a new victim. This one was Brenda Wolfe, another drug addict coming to the pig farm hoping for drugs. Mm-hmm. And, again, she was never seen again.
Oh, my God.
Yes. He bound her, choked her to death either with wire or a belt. He chopped her up, fed some of her to the pigs, and put the rest in barrels for the waste processing plant, as was his typical M.O.
Mm-hmm.
But the women of the area that he frequented grew increasingly scared, obviously, because the number of missing persons continued to grow, and eventually it became harder for Picton to actually convince women to come with him, even though he had a good reputation with them. So he started using some of his female friends, most of whom were already prostitutes or drug addicts, to lure women out. He would send them out just to the streets, or he would send them into women's shelters. He got the girls to say that Robert Picton was offering the girls fun, money, and drugs if they just came back with them and met up with him at the farm.
God.
Yeah, so he's basically
getting away with this bullshit over and over again.
Oh, yeah. He's got all of these killings that he's done, and then he gets bait, throws him out into fucking women's shelters and the streets where prostitutes are at, and then brings them back in, and he gets to keep killing them.
Mm-hmm.
He brings these women back only for them to be butchered, killed, and disposed of.
And gets away with it.
This went on for long enough that the number of missing women had actually become so large and it had so much public attention that the police eventually, in 2001,
finally,
yes, they finally created a missing women task force. Now, like I said, this was in 2001, and this was when the number of missing women reached more than 60. At this point, I think they now have, like, of the new cases in this one area, there's something like 67 or 63, I think, missing women. Now, finally, the police will create a missing woman task force. They posted reward posters for any sort of information leading to an arrest. And they started getting a whole bunch of tips coming in because people actually had things to say. And people, you know, mainly these prostitutes, knew what was going on.
Good God.
And a number of the tips that they got actually referred to a creepy man who lives on a pig farm. Some of them mentioned him by name. But ultimately, the police didn't see any point in looking into him, even though he had an assault arrest, but no conviction.
Good God, man. What an incompetent police force.
Yeah, apparently they just had too many suspects to look into, or something.
You got too much to do.
Too much to do.
I'm busy.
But can you guess what Picton was doing during this time?
Killing prostitutes.
He was killing more prostitutes. Of course. Yes, because the police just didn't care. But the police are now looking for him, so he decides this is a good time to kind of change it up a little bit. So in June, he murders Andrea Josbury and a woman named Serena in August. However, these two women, he didn't murder them in his usual process of the dismembering and getting rid of them. What he did was he cut off their hands, cut off their feet, and cut off their head. And then he stored these body parts in large plastic buckets that he kept in a meat freezer.
Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah. And then he just got rid of their bodies the way that he did with all the other ones, taking them to that plant.
Oh, my God.
And then. He ended up shooting a woman rather than strangling her like the others. This was in his room, by the way. And the force of the gunshot going into the back of her neck sent blood flying all over the walls, the floor, and soaking into the mattress, leaving much more of a mess than he'd ever dealt with before.
I was about to say, I hope he's got some Fabuloso, because he's going to need it.
I hope he doesn't have Fabuloso. What are you talking about?
He's going to need some serious clean.
Oh, yeah.
Maids.
Oh, yeah.
They'll take care of it.
It got, I'm serious, all over the walls, all over the floor, on the ceiling, all over cabinets, soaked way into his mattress. It was just gruesome. Despite him increasing the frequency of his killings, getting sloppier, and changing his usual methods, nothing was happening. Nothing was changing. Yeah. He was still able to do it. Until 2002. The thing that alerted police to him came from a truck driver who sometimes worked on the Picton farm. He had told police that he saw illegal weapons in the home of Robert Picton. This matched with the reports given to them by the hotline tips from the missing women and gave them enough cause to actually get off their ass and search his trailer.
Finally.
Yeah, because of illegal weapons, not because of a bunch of prostitutes saying, hey, these girls went with him and then never came back. But whatever, that's fine. And 4 days after they got this tip, they finally got the warrant and they swarmed Robert Picton's trailer. And what they found inside sparked the largest forensic sweep in British Columbia history. I think it might have been in Canadian history.
Oh my God.
While they were searching for the weapons in the house, they actually found the inhaler that belonged to the woman Serena, who he had killed earlier, one of the ones who he cut the feet, hands, and head off. The inhaler was just laying on the ground, basically under his bed, or under a couch or something. It wasn't even like in his room. And it had her name clearly listed on there. And this got the police to get a new search warrant to go through his house for the murder charges. And as they searched, they found all the blood from that previous victim, whose name was Mona Wilson. She was the one that he had shot. Her blood was all over his bedroom. It was so messy that it went into the kitchen, too. Just the blood from it. And he hadn't bothered to clean this up. He was just living in it.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And here's another thing. The remains of her body, the only pieces of her left, were found in a trash can outside of his trailer. They opened up this trash can that was covered up, and they found her bisected head with pieces of brain and hair floating in this mysterious bloody liquid
God. Seriously.
Weren't ready for that one, were you?
No.
Yeah, buddy.
Thank you for that.
You are welcome.
Creepy, creepy, creepy.
So Picton spent the night in prison while they were still searching through his house. And Picton, during the entirety of the investigation, actually remained calm. He had a relaxed and almost cheerful demeanor. And he didn't admit to anything, but it seemed like he kind of thought he was invincible. I heard a lot of people on this documentary talk about how they think that seeing his mom kill the child at the beginning of the story made him think that he would be able to get away with murder regardless of how sloppy he got. So he just literally did not give a shit. And they interrogated him for more than 11 hours. They eventually realized that this wasn't going to work, so they tried a new process. They sent Robert Picton into a cell where they had planted an undercover police officer with him as a way to see if he would admit to doing anything. Now, Picton knew that he was under surveillance while he was in the cell, but he couldn't help himself from bragging to his cellmate about the murders. Now, at this point, the police only had evidence of, I think, 3 girls that he had murdered. That was just from, like, the preliminary investigation. Mm-hmm. While he was in the cell, Robert Picton admitted to an undercover police officer that he killed 49 women, and he wishes that he had gotten one more in because he was going for an even 50.
Fuck.
Yeah, he said he only got caught because he got sloppy at the end and wishes he just could have gotten that one more in. And he also spoke of the disposal plant that he used for removing the women's bodies. And police had enough evidence now to charge him with the murder of Serena Abbotsway and Andrea Josbury after they found the women's heads, hand, and feet. Heads, hands, and feet. And by April of 2002, they had enough evidence to charge him with an additional 5 murders.
Oof.
Although most of the evidence from the other suspected killings would have been thoroughly erased or at least displaced pretty well. Mm-hmm. So they weren't able to connect all 49 to him. But by... But the investigation on Picton's farm, like I said, this is the most intense investigation on a plot of land that had pretty much ever happened there. It took 22 months for them to go through everything. They laid it out in grid and went just grid by grid. And by 2005, they had enough evidence to charge Picton with a grand total of 27 murders. So it's 27 confirmed, but he has openly confessed to 49.
That's on them. For not having investigated him earlier.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ugh.
Now, we are going to January of 2007. So the way this trial was set up for him, because he's been in prison this whole time now, they have shitloads of evidence against him. It was so much and it was so intense that they actually needed to split the trial up into 2 different trials. So they started with trial number 1 in 2007, and this was the one that covered the first 6 victims, the ones that they found initially.
Okay.
Now, after this trial began, it took the jury 2 weeks to deliberate, and Robert Picton was found not guilty on all counts of first-degree murder.
How?
But they did find him guilty on 6 counts of second-degree murder, which unfortunately only allowed for a maximum sentence of 25 years in Canada. Now, after years and years of waiting, because that was just for the first trial, they hadn't even gotten to that second trial yet, we jump forward to 2010, when the British Columbia legal system says that they will not be moving forward with a trial on the additional 21 victims that they had linked him to.
Oh my God.
So he got 25 years with no possibility of parole during that time. And that's it. That is less than 1 year for every murder that they confirmed that he had. Not even for what he had admitted. Exactly. That is basically 6 months for every person that he says he killed.
Embarrassing.
Embarrassing. Yeah. So, I mean, that's for the most part. That's pretty much it for Robert Picton. I mean, he killed all of these girls pretty much the same way, except for the last 3. But it was just the sheer number of it and the bizarre way that he went about it. And, of course, feeding it to the pigs is horrifying. That's something straight out of, like, Law and Order or some shit. But I have one last point to leave you off on.
Oh, perfect.
Because the horror does not stop there, my friend. No. So, Robert Picton is still alive. He is in prison. For one thing, if you look at the pictures of him, you will absolutely think that this is a man who has killed multiple people. But the last little bit of the horror in this story actually comes from as the evidence started coming forward and the press began learning more details about this case. Obviously, this case began to get a lot of traction. Now, the more they investigated and the more they heard Picton actually talk about what was going on here, it was announced by health officials that because of the processing and disposal plant that Picton had used, it was likely that the human remains had gotten into or contaminated some of the pork that was produced, meaning that that because of Picton, an unknown number of people, including the families of the victims who lived nearby, could have potentially eaten these human remains.
Oh, man.
Because
Without
knowing, they could have potentially eaten their own family members mixed in with their pork. Because this place was more than just a disposal. It was a processing plant where they just ground everything up and put it together.
Yep. Nobody wants to know how the sausage is made.
Exactly. And if you're in Vancouver, British Columbia, for a little bit, it was made of people.
It's good to know.
That is my last point on Robert Picton, the pig farmer. Not only does he murder almost 50 women, he then gets to turn around and feed those women to a whole bunch of people.
He got away with it for so long.
Yeah, and still basically got away with it. 25 years in prison is not that much for murdering almost 50 people.
No, he needs 125 years. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But he's alive. He's still just hanging out in prison, doing whatever he do. That's it, man. That's Robert Picton. There's not a happy ending to this story other than at least he's in prison.
I mean, at least we've got that, but even at that point, oh my God.
Yeah, and he can't get parole, you know, for the 25 years, but once that 25 years is up, he could still be alive. Who knows?
Thank you for this one.
You're welcome.
God, it's infuriating.
Oh, yeah.
Can't believe you got away with it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. You got me good.
Yes, I did. Do you want to go to Vancouver?
Ugh. Yeah, as long as you don't eat the food there.
Yeah. Super rough. But anyway, I've had that one on the back burner for a little while, but I wanted to bring something that had quite a bit of information for our resurgence here.
Nice.
And I feel like I did pretty well.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Excellent.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with my topic.
Groovy. And we have returned. We are now back. Look at us go. There's Jake over there, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Ready to go.
Ready to go.
Are you ready? Okay, so I researched this last week, and I posted on our TikTok about how crazy and freaked out this one subject got me, because the documentary that I used as basis for this topic does a really good job at ramping up the dread with the music and just the pacing of the show. So definitely go and take a look at it. I'm going to be talking about an alien abductee named Stan Romanek.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. And Stan Romanek is the subject of a documentary that is on Amazon Prime called Extraordinary. And like I said, it does a really good job of freaking you the fuck out if you want it to.
Badass.
Chris, I'm always like halfway there anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
When it comes to these things. Just because that's just how where I'm coming from. But anyway, he is at the center of one of the most documented alien abduction experience stories in the entire world. He has 13 years of documented experiences with extraterrestrials and other paranormal phenomena.
That's a good bit.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, they've got a documentary about him. He claims to have been abducted by aliens. He claims to have been implanted with alien artifacts inside his body, having sustained multiple mysterious injuries on his face and arms and body all over the place. He says that he's experienced telepathic communication with aliens. He has been brought back to his home dressed in different clothing from what he was wearing when he left.
I don't care for that.
Including a pair of women's, like a woman's dress one time.
Ah, well, we've all been there.
We've all been there. All right. So he says that his first UFO encounter was in the year 2000. He was, at the time, he was dating his current wife, who lived in another state. And so he was traveling to visit her, and he was, it's weird, he was out with a video camera kind of recording the sights because he lived in Colorado outside of Denver. And so he wanted to record a couple of like videos to send to her. And then he stopped on the side of the road because other people were waiting on the side of the road. And he looks up and there's a UFO about, I don't know. It was above the horizon and it was just floating. And he says that at some point he felt like it made contact with him or like it made itself aware of him. I don't know. It's just really strange. He says that he's discovered, like I said, multiple mysterious wounds on his body. He wakes up from these alien abduction experiences with bloody noses, like wound marks on his wrists and on his arms, strange bruising, bruising around his ears, blood coming out of his ears. A lot of the stuff, a lot of the wounds that he gets are detectable by UV light. So they glow in the dark. It's really creepy.
That's funky as hell. Mm-hmm.
He says that he's had communications with aliens over a spirit box. They've also called his home. They've also interfered with the electronics in and around his homes. He also claims that aliens have followed his car and visited his home at night. And that, again, he experiences telepathic communication. In one account from 2003, he claims he woke up and found himself wearing a lady's flannel nightgown and suspected that he had been abducted and returned in women's clothing.
Hmm.
He claims, now some of his claims are just like way off corroborated. Like, I totally understand alien abduction,
mm-hmm.
but there's a level to it. And once you go past that certain point, it's like, that's a little bit too far-fetched. So he's about to get there. And I'll explain why. After a while, he began to suspect that the clothing belonged to another supposed alien abductee, Betty Hill. So he says that he came back in a nightgown and that it was Betty Hill's.
Okay.
When asked if the gown had been tested for Hill's DNA, Romanek claims that it had not because the test was too expensive.
I mean, I get that. You're a baller on a budget.
Right, I get it. He actually appeared in 2009 on ABC Primetime, and he made an unsubstantiated claim that he had undergone hypnosis, regression hypnotherapy, and with a scientist who specializes in alien abduction claims. And he claims that under hypnosis, he wrote out the Drake equation, which is a formula used to estimate the number of communicative extraterrestrial civilizations in our galaxy.
Okay. And that
he was able to write out this Drake equation by memory. That he didn't know anything of it before, but that it was like implanted into his brain, and then he just had to write it down. And so he writes out this Drake equation, which is filled with all of this technical jargon and just numbers and symbols. And then he adds times 100 at the bottom of the result. So basically saying that doesn't matter how you calculate the number of communicative extraterrestrial civilizations, there's probably 100 more than what you think there are.
Woof.
Mm-hmm. So some of the bullet points of this guy, it just goes on and on and on. And the best thing about the documentary that I watch is that it just kind of gives off a certain ones. When he was on ABC Primetime in 2009, he said that he had physical evidence of his abduction experiences by way of alien implant in his leg. So he had shown like little wound marks that shone through UV light, and then he was able to take one out, and it was like a sliver of glass, but it was rounded glass. And he claims that he showed it with a microscope, and that it seemed to have some sort of like serial number or symbols on it. But then he says that later on he couldn't find the sliver of glass, that someone had taken it from him, and that the scar was completely gone. So like a lot of this stuff just becomes unsubstantiated.
Yeah, it's a little funky.
Mm-hmm. He's got lots of photos. He started to document all of the strange things that would happen to him on VHS tapes. And so he's got a lot of video and photos of lights outside his home, recordings of lights up in the sky. He's got orbs flying across his house, shadow people in his home as well.
Cool, we love that. That's really
scary to have to watch when you're by yourself in your apartment. One of the weirdest things is where he's seen like on his, he's got security cameras, and he's seen energy beams outside of his home. in the form of orbs and lights that are going past.
Groovy.
Almost like crop circles, but burn holes in the ground, in the grass around his home. Again, he says that he's been abducted multiple times. And that he's got indentations on his back, scratches on his back, scarring, little biopsy circles, handcuff-style scratches on his wrists, as well as geometric wounds that glow under UV light. And just lots of bruising, lots of scratches, sunburn from one night to the next. How do you get sunburn in the middle of the night?
That's
bloody noses a lot.
That's fucking
weird.
He
shows up with bloody noses.
I also used to get bloody noses all the time, but that's also just because we live in Texas and the allergies are terrible.
Yeah. You at least have a reason.
Yes.
He does not have a reason. He goes to bed, he wakes up in these random ass places, and he's got bruising and bloody noses. So, one night, he was abducted from his home. And when he checked his, he showed up later on, he was in the backyard, doesn't even remember where he was, woke up with a bloody nose. He checks the security camera, and he records this huge bright floodlight on the side of the house. And it's moving back and forth. The house, the wall that, the, it's outside, but it's face, it's on the side of the wall where his bedroom is. And then it looks like a beam of light shines along the wall. And then the camera goes dead, and that's when he was abducted.
Okie dokie, then.
So he goes out the next day with a camera and a video recorder, and he looks along the wall on the aluminum siding that's on the side of the house, and there's a spot there that looks like it's been cleaned. So like everything is kind of dingy white along mm-hmm. the siding, like dirt, and then there's just this arc shape. And at the center of it is his video camera, his closed circuit security camera, and the entire arc is clean and white.
That's fucking weird.
So, he goes back inside, and he's trying to think of a way that he can gather evidence to try to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Evidence is important.
And he goes back out the next day, and there are two guys with a truck, and they are removing all of the aluminum siding on that side of the house and replacing it and making it new. So he tries to ask them what they're doing, and like, oh, we're with this particular contractor, and we got a call from your landlord that he wanted us to change the siding. And he's like, really? Well, he didn't say anything to me. He's like, well, I mean, we're almost done anyway. So they're starting to put everything back up, and he asks, well, can I take a little bit of that, of the old stuff? And they're like, no, we need all of that. We need it to prove to him that we got the job done. And so then the next day he gets a call back from his landlord. He'd called him and left a voicemail. The landlord calls him back, and he says, hey, what happened with the house? I mean, I came out, you know, I called you about this problem we had with the electrical, and then suddenly you're replacing. He says, I never had anybody replace the siding on the house. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Fucking
what company did you use? And he tells him, and he looks it up. The company does not exist.
Of course it doesn't.
And these just guys came out of nowhere.
Oh, that's
funky. And replaced the siding on the house.
That is weird. Mm-hmm. That's weird shit.
He's found crop circles in the back of his yard before. Burnt crop circles where the grass around it is brown and some of it is green. Is really weird. Here's the craziest part. He had an ACL tear on one of his knees.
Ow.
Right? And so he'd gone back and forth getting pre-op and post, you know, getting everything ready and the insurance coverage and all that. Clearance to have the AC done. And then he had an abduction experience. And he wakes up in the backyard and he comes back in the house and he's talking to his wife. And she asks him to come and take a look at the window because she thinks she sees a light up in the horizon. And so he walks across the room and she just like, she catches it. And he looks at it, he's like, yeah, I see that. And she says, come over and walk towards me. And he walks back towards her, towards the light switch at the front of the room. She goes,
what the fuck?
You're not limping. And he looks down and he doesn't have his leg brace on either.
What the fuck?
And he's like, what? So he calls his doctor, his orthopedic doctor, the next day and says, look, I don't think I need the surgery. And she's like, oh, look, Mr. Romanek, I understand people get nervous about ACL tears and they don't want to go through with the surgery and they think that they're feeling better. But I'm telling you right now, if you don't do anything about it, it's just going to continue to get inflamed and aggravated and it's going to get worse. And eventually you're not going to be able to walk. So it's better if you come in and have the surgery. Don't back out. And he's like, no, I'm serious. I have no pain. And so he goes to the doctor and she takes a look. She takes CT. She's like, This is insane. It looks like you had the surgery. Somebody repaired the cartilage. And you're walking around with no pain?
What the fuck?
Not only that, oh my God. But he had five circular, like I told you, he has these five, he always shows up with these circular wounds, mm-hmm. and he had five of them on the back of his knee.
What the hell?
And they cleared up and scabbed up and went away within days. And he never experienced any pain, any swelling after that, whatever surgery he had. Not only that, but they found his brace in the backyard and it had been burnt.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking weird. It had been weird.
Like melted.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is buck wild.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
So he started having ghost box sessions. He calls them ghost boxes. We call them spirit boxes.
Yeah.
But it's where the feedback is coming through and you think that maybe somebody's using, you know, VHF to communicate with you. And so he started hearing all of this back and forth communication and somebody started calling him Starseed.
Starseed?
Starseed, like Star-Lord, but Starseed.
Star-Lord, man.
So this person would start talking to him, and he was trying to communicate back. He ended up being able to talk on the phone with somebody multiple times. And they all call him Starseed and tell him he's special, and they've got a plan for him. I mean,
okay.
And these are recordings. You have to watch this documentary because they record this stuff. It's not just him saying, oh, this is what she said. You get to hear the voice.
Okay, that's cool as shit. Mm-hmm.
This all happened around the same time that he started seeing multiple shadow people in his home. And so anytime he would leave his bedroom, he would take either a camera or a video camera to do it.
That's smart.
He started getting followed by human people.
Hmm.
Unmarked SUVs, driving up to his driveway, following him back and forth to work. He would ride a bike for exercise and they would follow him. A couple of times they got rough with him. He's found his hard drive wiped multiple times and words written across the screen as the screensaver, you can't hide.
Oh, I don't care for that. Intimidation.
Mm-hmm. One time he came home and his stereo speakers were buzzing with a high-pitched squeal. And he's like, they've been doing it for 15 minutes and we just wanted to document it. And he goes over to the stereo system and the thing is unplugged.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's no bueno.
One time he came into his home and he found all of the prescription bottles in his medicine cabinet were burnt. Like, no evidence of fire. It looked like someone had melted them.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm. One time the cats were acting strange, so he followed them outside. He recorded an orb, and then he recorded them from inside his home and one went through his wall and left a strange impression on the inside of the wall.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Oh, man. He once appeared in 2008. He actually appeared on Larry King Live. And he was talking about this one video that he's got. It's called the Boo video. So here's the thing.
Oh, no.
He was in his home back in, like, 2007. And he thought that he was having trouble with a peeping Tom because he was seeing somebody, like, out of the corner of his eye when he would come through the... When he would walk through the kitchen... Mm-hmm. But he wasn't sure who it was, right? So a friend of his was like, well, you've got a camera with an IR, a night vision mode. Why don't you just put it like on a tripod? And then when you leave the room, if you feel like you're being watched, just turn it on and maybe the guy will come along, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he does that. He walks out of the frame and it's showing and then they elapse it. And suddenly an alien gray pokes its head up and looks into the window.
No fucking way. And then
puts his head back down.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. And then when Romanek comes back into the room, he freaks out and he looks and he's like, oh my God, I can see him. He's in the backyard. Oh my God, I can see him.
What the fuck?
Swear to God. So he was on Coast to Coast AM. And they suggested, they wanted him to do a lie detector test about it. But he went through a lie detector test. And even though when they asked him, is the boo tape a hoax, he got a, he failed that question. He also failed a lot of the other questions. So he came out by saying, well, maybe the lie detector test doesn't work on me. But it's whatever. He's got another one. Oh, my God. He's got another video where the gray is actually inside his house.
Oh, I don't care for that.
He walks down with the camcorder, and he's like, I thought I heard somebody over here, but I don't see anything. And he pans over to the kitchen, and the gray is poking his head out from the side and looking at him. And I swear to God, the thing fucking blinks.
Oh, no. Oh, why is the blinking worse?
I know. And then disappears. Oh, it's so scary. The hair on my face is standing up from being scared about this. Oh, my God.
They signed you.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. I'm going to look this up. You said it's called the Boo video?
Boo video. Oh.
I'm going to try and find some of these.
You're going to watch it during the nighttime?
Yeah, of course.
You should be able to find it pretty easy. I found it. No, that isn't it.
Here we go. Oh, got it.
Found it?
Mm-hmm. I'm watching it right now. Okay, he's set up the camera and he's looking out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. There it is.
Told you.
Oh, damn. Oh, that is funky as hell. That's like looking around and shit. And then it's just gone. It just dips.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? No, I can't find the one where it's inside the house where you said it blinks at him. I'll watch that documentary later, though.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go. Okay, so one of the other things is I told you that he was having some EVP interactions, and that it turned into phone calls. He would talk to this woman named or he would talk to this girl named Audrey over and over again. Mm-hmm. She would leave voicemails, and they started to talk. The voice is slightly robotic, but she warns him of a conspiracy against him and calls him Starseed and says that he and the children are at risk. So he reports being able to talk to Audrey, this person, for over 2 hours at one time. He also reported that once while he was on the phone, a loud noise from the phone call rendered him unconscious. It was like a beep, and it like put him into a state. He also claims to have recorded conversations with human-alien hybrid children. And ew. The human-alien hybrid child that he talked to says that there are 9 of them. And he's got all of these photos of them in the background in his home. Some of them are okay. Some of them look a little bit staged. He's got footprint impressions in the ground as well as handprints on the windows that he shows.
Mm.
So he thinks he's being visited. One time he went to a conference and somebody took a photo and there was a little girl in one of the front seat in front of the front chairs that was watching him speak, and she looks a little strange, like her eyes are a little bit too far set.
Mm.
And the theory is that he knows this child, that this is one of his human alien hybrid children.
Ew.
Yeah, exactly. One of the funniest things, one of the strangest stories is that back in 2001, when he first saw his first UFO, that night he was living with his sister at the time, and somebody knocked at the door, and he goes downstairs to try to see if his sister, if someone's going to open the door, and his sister was at the door, and she opened the door, and there were 3 gray aliens.
Ah, don't care for that.
And that when his sister moved away from the door to let them in, and when he did, her face was just like slack, like she was like passed out, but her body was moving.
Oh no!
Like they were controlling her.
Oh, that's not good.
Mm-hmm. He says that they gave him all of this advanced information and put it in his mind, and he also reports that he's been abducted in tandem with a woman that he doesn't recognize, but a human woman, mm-hmm. and that he's had interactions with her. On the multiple interactions while he was abducted, while he was on the UFO, that he's actually like communicated with her and kind of knows her. Well, about 10 years after this, he was at a UFO conference and saw a woman in the background, like, and at one of the conferences, and just recognized her. And she goes, "Do you know who I am?" And he says, You seem familiar. And she says, I've seen you up in the UFOs.
Oh, no.
We've communicated with each other. And this woman has been, she has had children with him. Oh. Human alien hybrid children that are like part her, part him, part alien.
Oh, and then she's interacted
with these 9 children.
Oh, 9 children? Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
But of course he's married to another woman.
Yeah.
And he has these experiences where he says that, you know, that he's got this interaction and he's got this bond with this person because they've had children, but they're like human alien hybrid children.
Oh, that's weird.
Mm-hmm. Some of his early footage was substantiated by MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, but it started getting kind of outlandish towards the end of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, there's just like this mound of evidence. There's the physical evidence of the experiences that he's had, these scars and stuff. And they may have been self-inflicted, but at the same time, they might have been. He's got photos. He's got orb photos. He's got EVP recordings.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the 2 Boo videos. Right. So there's a lot of that's out there. But one of the craziest things was that he was able to, at one point during regression hypnotherapy, recreate this extremely complicated physics equation that's related to propulsion and faster than light travel.
What the fuck?
That's an actual, like, it's an actual equation that a physicist here on Earth put together. And it's like, it's an equation that it basically explains warp speed travel and how to acquire warp speed travel using gravity, a gravity drive, which is something
from Event Horizon. Event Horizon.
Exactly. But under current conditions with the current technology that we have, we can't create a warp engine, but the guy already knows the math that would make it happen. But we just can't create it in and of ourselves. Stan Romanek has been evaluated by a clinical psychologist. He scored very high on the PTSD test, but was not diagnosed with psychopathy or schizophrenia or antisocial personality or anything like that.
Yeah.
So they're trying to say that he's not doing it for himself. He's not doing it because of a mental illness. The only thing that he's got is post-traumatic stress disorder, which we see in other alien abductees.
Yeah, because it's a traumatic experience every single time.
So, to summarize, he had all these things happen. He had people threatening him with threatening phone calls, interactions where they would, like, you know, pull up to him and rough him up and that sort of stuff. Well, it all culminated in 2014 when Stan was arrested for possession of child pornography.
I was just looking at that because it showed up and I was like, oh, should I mention this? Oh, no. Yeah.
And in the documentary, they just put it out there, like, in 2014, Stan was arrested for possession of child pornography. And they said, before you judge too quickly, and they flash all of these news articles from reputable news sources where people have been, they've had their computers hacked or viruses go through their computers and leave child pornography on their hard drives.
Yeah.
So they're like, look, it may be that he watches child pornography. That could be it. Or maybe he's being framed.
Yeah, I know he claimed that something put it onto his computer that he was being framed by the government or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Woo, buddy. That was a twist I did not see coming.
Yeah, but ultimately he had to get a lawyer and he wanted to put all of the stuff about alien abductions in the conspiracy theory. He wanted to put it out there on trial, but his lawyers smartly enough told him not to because it sounds crazy and cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get you out of these. It doesn't have any relevance to the child pornography claims. So they didn't put any of that information out there. And he ended up being convicted and he had to serve some jail time and he's going to have to be on probation for like 10 years and be registered as a sex offender. So either, I don't know, it's just weird. But at the same time, he had no attention-seeking proclivities before all of this happened.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about that before. We talked about it with Whitley Strieber. This is not a club that anybody wants to be in. Nobody wakes up and says, you know what? I want to turn my life upside down by starting to tell people, everyone I know, I'm going to tell everybody that I know that I was abducted by aliens and they conducted experiments with me. Because that's going to do what? Make you more popular? Elevate your social status?
No,
it's not. People are going to think you're crazy.
Yeah.
So for somebody to have the guts to say this, I mean, there's so many easier ways to draw attention to yourself in this world.
Oh, yeah.
Than to do this. And so that, to me, lends a little bit of validity to the whole idea that, you know, this happened and I just wanted to tell somebody because I just wanted to be able to share that experience with someone.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Stan Romanek. A lot has happened to him. If you get a chance, watch the hour and a half documentary on Amazon Prime because it is so good. They do such a good job at showing the evidence but also ramping up the suspense and the creep factor.
I'll definitely check out that documentary. I think it sounds really interesting, and everything that you said sounds fucking crazy.
Oh, it's crazy.
I do just want to say, and we talked like, you know, we don't know for sure whether or not the child pornography was his. If it is, of course, we're not trying to defend him. We're not trying to say anything like in support of that. Just want to make that abundantly clear. That is never okay. It very well could have been him, and if so, then fuck this guy. But also, the alien aspect of this is still very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make it abundantly clear. And child pornography with the bad. Two.
It's just so strange.
Yeah. But Jesus Christ, man, that is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Some fucking wild shit this episode. I love it. I love it.
Nice times. All right, that's my story.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for sharing.
You're welcome. We got anything else?
Just the usual stuff. Let people know about our show if you think that other people would enjoy hearing this. We will try to stay consistent with our posting, but you know how things go. We do have some merch up on Redbubble. If you guys are interested in supporting us financially, we do have a Patreon, or you can subscribe to us directly through Anchor. You can find a link in the episode descriptions. But other than that, I think that's pretty much it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate you all.
We love you
all. And I love you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, if that's it.
I think that's it, my friend.
Right. Well, from Dylan, my co-host, my name is Jake. We hope we've left you too scared to sleep.